This is the one with a bisexual bard.
Bones and blood.
Bewitching.
Bedlam.
And a buxom blackamoor.
It's called The Shakespeare Code. Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Soilers, Zambud, wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when?
Back when.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Two Back When,
a Doctor Who podcast.
Slash Doc Pass.
That's what I was waiting for. I was wondering who was going to get there. So, yes, they were on N0...
30!
Thank you, Drew. This one's a Shakespeare Code.
Yes, it is.
Thanks, Ponkin. I'm going to keep those. Those are introductions, aren't they?
Now, okay, right? Yeah, fine. Hello.
So another edition of Tennant.
Another edition of Tennant, yes.
Another edition of Tennant with Martha Jones. Sure. To see how they fare.
Her first proper adventure.
Yes.
Her first adventure in time.
Yes.
Yeah, no space yet.
No. This is her first jaunt.
Actually, she's been to the moon.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was going to say the Doctor, he's quite condescending in this one. He doesn't want to overwhelm her right at the beginning, but actually she's seen it all.
She has.
So I've got a question.
Oh, okay.
About Shakespeare.
Okay.
Because, obviously, he's pretty totemic. He's a figure, everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
Has he never appeared in Doctor Who before?
We have, in fact, encountered him on Who Back When before.
Goodness.
He appeared in the classic William Hartnell serial The Chase, I want to say? I think it's The Chase. If I'm wrong about that, I'll future punk in it. But the Doctor doesn't meet him. However, the Doctor has... He has a gizmo called a Space and Time Visualizer, which is basically... It's a space-time TV. He targets it to sneak a peek at William Shakespeare.
Sneak a peek.
Yeah.
What does he see?
Actually, I think he's... I may be misremembering this, but I think he sees another character who also appears in this. Spoiler alert. He sees William Shakespeare speaking with Queenie.
Oh.
I think. We may not even hear anything. It's just like, oh, that's Shakespeare. So he has technically appeared on the show.
So he had another adventure on the go, but there's a bit of downtime between perils, and so he thought... Let's turn on the space-time TV.
Yeah, that whole sequence is literally just like, let's demonstrate for our audience how the space-time TV works. So it's like, one channel, Shakespeare, another channel. Oh, is that Abraham Lincoln? Another channel. Oh,
my
that's
TV.
The Beatles. Like, it's literally like that.
This channel, Deborah from Hull. Like, why is that only the important people? Anyhow,
yeah.
Before we jump in fully, we should get down to the business of a B-scale.
A B-scale. Yeah, let's do it.
The Doctor takes Martha on a jaunt to Tudor London, 1599 to be precise, where William Shakespeare is about to finish his long-awaited sequel to Love's Labour's Lost.
We're also introduced to Shakespeare's three editors who happen to be interstellar witches, seducing hapless young Romeos in order to tear them apart.
Their nefarious plan is to open a rift in space and time through the power of words, thus ruining a perfectly good play. Hilarity ensues.
Bees go over, you are welcome.
Okay, so at the beginning, this is the Doctor whisking Martha through time on a impressive jaunt, right?
We have a cold open.
Why do I always miss those? So this is one of the young, hitherto mentioned young Romeos.
Yeah. I mean, we start off with bone references from moment zero in this episode.
Yeah. So this young chap is playing the lute.
Serenading someone.
A wanton trollop on a balcony.
Absolutely. Yeah. A porcelain-skinned wanton trollop, no less.
Encouraging him to climb up her cleavage to a room upstairs for some Netflix and consummation.
Yes.
She actually says consummation, doesn't she?
Yeah.
It is literally come upstairs and bone.
Yeah.
Right, now, please.
Just in case the kids weren't clued up on it.
Well, maybe they thought, tonight's the night. Hungry Hippos tournament.
Also, so the guy goes upstairs.
Oh, God, yeah.
Fully ready to bone. Like, would you like to come in? Hell yes, I would.
Yeah.
Right? And he sees all... I feel like that's not real. I feel like no one would have noticed. No one would have noticed what was going on in the room.
He immediately disses this pad. The first thing is like, this place is in a dreadful state.
It's just a little dirty, mate. All right. Because whips and chains looking about less fine.
Yeah. In fact, that might just add to the ambiance.
It's like, I rent. Decoration's got nothing to do with me.
I think it's just
not allowed to paint the walls, guy.
I think you walk in and she's like, man, she's a freak. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he sort of says it's foul and is hellish, and then that's when she turns all witchy.
Yeah, she goes from attractive, way too clean for $15.99, to Disney cartoon witch.
Yep. And introduces to her pair of mothers.
Yes, Mother Doomfinger and
Blood Tide.
There you go.
Another Blood Tide. Yeah. Yeah, the fuck is a Doomfinger?
Another one.
Bing bong, future Drew Back When here. In case you didn't hear what Ponkin said, he said, one can lead to the other.
That's the worst joke you've ever made. In 100 and however many episodes of Drew Back When. What's wrong with you?
I apologize.
I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, since he came back from the hospital, he's not been the same.
It's the lack of alcohol.
Okay, so...
So, yeah, that's... essentially, you get three Davros clones.
Oh, yeah, nice one.
They really did look a huge amount like Davros. In that opening scene, it seemed, because they were all cackling and witchy.
And have kilograms of just plaster on their faces.
Yeah, someone wants to look 300 years old and ugly. That's the template.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
They just start tearing chunks out of him.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that kid's pretty violent, is she?
Yeah, it is pretty violent. And before we cut into the opening credits, like, while the two mothers are, whatever they're doing, eviscerating him or eating him or whatever they're doing, the one that we met in the beginning, still looking like a Disney witch, turns to the camera, I think at first in New Who, turns to the camera and addresses us, the audience.
Very theatrical.
Yes. Oh, well, which I suppose is very thematic for this episode. But, like, why does she do that? Whom is she talking to? Why is she talking to me? Or us, the audience. Like, what the fuck?
Exactly, anyway. We're the audience. We're the audience and we're the meta audience. It's a prologue. We're being introduced to the play.
Yeah.
So not only the fourth dimension, but the fourth wall being... Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so, opening credits. And then this is when the Doc and Martha materialise around the corner from the globe, right?
Yeah.
Instantly leading on from where we left them last time, they're still lurching and jolting about. Hmm. So Martha's been in the TARDIS for all of a minute, and now she's plonked in 16th century London.
Hmm.
She had a lot to say at this point.
What'd she say?
Well, it was tricky.
What was the Harry Potter joke?
That comes much later.
But there is, I may be misremembering this, but I seem to recall that it's a two-parter, that there's something in the beginning, which is then bookended by the whole blah, 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 oh, good old JK.
Upstairs in the inn and they're getting ready for bed.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but at this point, I had to rewatch this scene a few times because I wanted to be more positive for this episode. Last time, you ended on, is the Shakespeare Code next time? Fuck! And so... I was prepared for Fear Her Mark II, starring someone we'd actually be disappointed to see underserved. And so Martha, at the same time, she has the job of establishing her character a bit more. It's her first new adventure, and she's got to get used to travelling in space and time, and she's got to deliver this little monologue about, no, it's a new language, it's about when.
It's so poorly written. I can't get over how badly written.
Yeah, we actually, just to put this into context, Nick watched this at home before coming over. And when he came over, I was watching this, so Nick has now been forced to watch it twice in a row. And whilst watching it, we were talking about how dismal the writing is in places.
It's so bad.
But I was also thinking that maybe we're just jaded, cynical old hacks. Because, you know, we've seen multiple doctors, we've been all over the universe, he has shown us the world, we've felt the indescribable feelings, we've soared, we've tumbled, we've reeled, and now Martha has to start right from the beginning and convey some wonderment. And are we just unable to share that with her? Is that our problem?
No.
No?
No.
Nick
on this
I don't think that... And whilst that's a gallant defence, and I don't think it's Martha as a character, because actually I grow to be relatively fond. I don't think it's... maybe it's Free Magman as an actress in the delivery. I really just genuinely think it's the writing and the dialogue is so poor that I feel relatively insulted to be called a hack when being forced to have watched this writing.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I don't think it's down to her acting abilities, because in the last one, she actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I think we were all in agreement that she was a pretty good companion. Like, that was a pretty good first adventure for her.
Mm.
And also, that first reaction, any new companion's first reaction to being in a new time or being on a new planet or whatever, it follows sort of a template, and we're okay with that, even though we have experienced, some of us may have experienced 52 years of Doctor Who at this point, but like, regardless, we're okay with that. Right?
Yeah.
This tries to follow the same template and fails. Mm. It doesn't do the same thing it did when Rose had her journey, or Pond, or anyone else.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I know. I was just, because I spend so much time picking holes in it, I decided to try and support it, but at the worst possible moment.
Come back to the dark side.
You didn't swear last week. I'm going to be nice this week.
Okay, so we're in Tudor, London. Look, this is a jaunty date that I'm taking you on. Look at my shiny car. Look how far I can drive.
Yeah, except in this case, the shiny car is like, hey, step away from the catapulted poo that's coming from upstairs.
Yep. It's like, oh, we're in Southwark? Is that where it is?
Yep.
So we must be round the corner from the Globe.
And so off they go.
Yeah. Yeah. To go see Shakespeare. To go see a play. Oh, actually, before that, little pause. Or was it during this portion anyway? Martha comments on her race.
Yes, she does.
That is some new shit for Doctor Who.
Yeah, and the ensuing scene with Shakespeare as well on the same topic.
Yeah, but I thought that was... Because actually, I always used to think this sort of stuff as a kid. I remember I had a book where the kids go back in time to sort of 17th century, and a couple of the kids are black, and I'm just like, well, that's not going to end well. As a child, I thought this. As a kid, I thought this. I thought, well, that's from what I understand. And TV shows like this never really address that as an idea. So I was quite glad to see that they did, in some sense.
Sure.
I mean, the explanation was pretty shit. She's like, oh, won't this go badly? She's like, just own it. Cool. Make it till you make it. New year, new me.
I thought that there was a couple of black women in period costume, though. So
there was.
Really? I didn't notice that.
Almost immediately afterwards.
Yeah, so that was part of the answer. But they were really in the shadows. You really had to look to see them, so...
Well, I was going to make a reference to Girl in the Fireplace, where part of the royal court... Like, you had members of practically every minority as a member of the royal court. Quite unrealistic, I would say.
Yeah.
As in, like, historically inaccurate. But certainly, over the time, in terms of the TV production, this goes against it. That was another Tennant episode. That was not long ago. That was, like, what, a year before?
I think it would have been better. Like, this one was better, that they addressed some level of it.
Agreed.
And were like, yeah... Moving on, right? Rather than racism doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree.
So that was cool. Mm. Anyway, just a little pin that I thought that was cool. As much as I was lambasting the lazy writing, at least they tried to do something real.
Hmm. Yeah, and there are a couple of good lines. I think Martha is best when she's delivering comedy lines about getting sectioned.
Yes, that was actually pretty funny. That was a good one. What the line is, oh, you can tell everyone you've gone to see Shakespeare. It's like, and then I can get sectioned, which is good. And prescient, because they get Bedlam and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, I didn't think of that.
Mm.
Topical.
But also, it's not just like, oh, Doctor, you're so lovely.
Yeah. Okay, so they go to the play and they get to see...
The end of Labour's Lost and William Shakespeare popping onto the stage.
Just call it Triple L from now on. Be
Triple L.
And the next one will be Triple XL, right? No, that's a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just a really big T-shirt.
Yeah.
That
might well be.
Yeah, so Bill Shakespeare pops on stage and reveals himself to be quite a cad, as opposed to the gentleman, the sophisticated bard that the Doctor introduces him as.
So, okay, lazy writing point number two.
Oh, interesting.
Or at least number one, whatever you want to go to, is that...
lazy counting.
They most...
just a point number one.
Lazy one. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, words are important here, not numbers, apparently. Anyway.
Sorry for using my earth science.
Fuck that so much. We'll get to it. So just over and over and over asserting the complete fact that Shakespeare is a genius and never really displaying it at all.
Until, very poorly, the end.
Until very poorly the end, which is not him. Like, that's these writers pretending to be Shakespeare.
Yes.
Whereas what would have been great is when David Tennant went, he's a fucking genius. Look at all these crazy words he came up with, the phrases. Just a few of them would have been cool.
Yeah, out of his mouth rather than the Doctor's into his.
There's only one case of the Doctor quoting something that Shakespeare has already, at this point in time, written, and Shakespeare going, actually, that's one of mine. Everything else is sort of evidence of Shakespeare basically stealing all of his good writing from other people. or being, like, Cyrano de Bergerac by the Doctor, even in that final scene.
Yeah.
And in the final scene, you've got the same old trope of the Doctor going, he's brilliant!
Yeah.
Oh, throughout the entire thing. But there are a few points in the plot where Shakespeare stands out from all other bipeds in this story as someone who is actually very special.
The only person that could ever possibly have done this, like, all right, I get it. So you're writing a TV show for the BBC, predominantly for an English-speaking and or, you know, British audience, let's say, at least in the initial phase. And they're going to be of a certain age, probably all having to do Shakespeare at school.
Sure.
Right? Let's get this point home. This will be a thing, something that they can relate to. And we go, yeah, he's a genius. He's great. When you go to school, be super into Shakespeare or whatever. But they were like,
but he's just a dude.
There's like 5,000 years worth of literature up to this point. Some of it pretty awesome.
Yeah, but they have to pick one thing to focus on, and they're pretty likely to pick the stereotypical one. And fine, so they have picked Shakespeare. I think the beat should be like, if you have picked Shakespeare, then fucking do something Shakespearean.
Absolutely. But I'm saying that in the point, it's like he's the only person that could have come, you know, when the, and sorry, this is a bit of a leap ahead and a bit of a spoiler, but when the carrier knights say, oh, new words help us came out of the darkness or some shit like that, it's like, well, basically everything up to now has been new words, you dicks.
Yeah, I have a question about that, which I will ask you, and which I sort of asked you, and that is a good point. But I've got something that I want to raise about that when we get to that point in the story.
Okay.
I already mentioned this when we were rewatching the show before, but...
Yeah, suspicious lack of Shakespeare in this Shakespeare episode.
Yeah. To pick up on something you said, last series, you're on the production team for Doctor Who, you got to get your Shane Ward joke out very quickly, put it in a crappy episode, because nobody's going to remember him in 6 months. Shakespeare is on the syllabus.
Yeah.
So... you can afford to wait as many years as you like to come up with good lines and a good ending and then drop that shit.
Absolutely.
And they did it half-formed.
Yeah.
But who knows how long they were working on this piece of garbage.
Don't worry. Don't worry. I understand in the next 10 years they're going to drop a William Golding episode.
Someone's actually polishing the...
turd.
All right. I think at this point we're made privy to the alien plot.
Yes, or at least in some degree there was
They use their weird space voodoo doll to manipulate Shakespeare to tell his audience, actually, there's a sequel coming out for this. In fact, it's coming out tomorrow, so I'll be back then. Great.
Now this, I don't know, this whole bit about having his ego saying, them saying, play's going to be out tomorrow, and then him having to write the damn play in like an evening.
Yeah.
And then everyone learn it in it, right? I'm going to buy that as an idea that they could do that. But I could not escape the grown-up anxiety that deadline introduced it to be.
Yeah,
I just sat there going, they'll never get it done.
Yeah. Wait, what? What? Which one? This one?
I don't have the resources for this. I'm already over capacity.
Yeah, we did a completely different play yesterday. Now you want us to do a double bill?
Which you haven't even written yet, so I can't start learning it now.
I know. Yeah. I like a lot of the fun I have when I'm watching Doctor Who is it makes me not fucking think about work. And all.
Oh, no.
And all I was thinking is like, oh shit, this guy could write a play in an evening. I need to get that report out.
It took me back to previous work because I proofread a book on Shakespeare and the Master of the Revels. It wasn't called Linley, by the way.
It was
called Edmund Tilney.
Oh.
But I suppose Edmund Tilney didn't really die, so I don't know. You can parachute a random wrong name in there. But it would have taken 2 to 6 weeks, and he would have... His scene was good. I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead. But when he comes in and says, you've got to go through me, and I will license it, and I will help write it and polish it up. That was all completely right, apart from his name.
Fair. I sort of remember that from when I studied Shakespeare in Love. But I think we are made privy to the plan here now. I think that they reveal that they're manipulating him to write a new play. They're going to put something in this play, a few lines, a few magic words... Basically a spell that will, in some way, mean the end of the Earth.
Izzy Wizzy, let's get bloody, or something.
Pretty much.
Right. At this juncture, the Doc and Martha go looking for Shakespeare at an inn, a taverna.
Well, yeah. Can I jump in with a soundbite? Because 9 minutes into this episode, we get even more bone jokes from the milfy maid who works at the inn.
Oh, Dolly Bird.
Oh, is that her name?
Pretty much.
It's not her name, but yes.
That's her name from now on.
Dolly Bird. Yeah, Dolly is up for it.
Yes.
Drink up. There's no beer in this lodging's house to suit the Spanish.
Dolly Bailey, you saved my life.
Do more than that later tonight.
this is that first point where Shakespeare is proven special, like different as a person. He's proven different because, yes, you are right, Doc and Martha show up to say hi to him and they flash the psychic paper and it doesn't work on him.
Yeah, true.
Why? That. Why does it not work on him?
Oh, first, we got to, before we do that, is that we need to, how much of a poonhound he is. Because while sort of like, oh, I'm a fan, or this didn't work, Martha worked.
Oh, right, yeah. He gets a massive boner for Martha.
Yeah, he's taken with the exotic beauty, right?
Yes, he is.
Do you want to sound like the hey, nonny, nonny?
Oh, oh, good.
Goodness sake.
Hey, nonny, nonny.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Okay, so let's say we're in the tavern now, they're chatting away, and the witches are...
Well, we get a continuation of what you brought up in the beginning. He basically just disperses his little band of merry men and just stays on his own with Martha because he wants to flirt the shit out of him. And then we get the tiny little list of what can I call you and princes of Ethiop, Blackamoor, blah, 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 blah. Which is now the continuation of, what's going to happen to her in this time.
So at this point, Shakespeare starts to unravel them as a pairing, right? So the psychic paper doesn't show anything.
Yeah, he's had psychic training.
Yeah, he at some point starts to intuit that the doctor might be otherworldly. Oh, why his eyes are so old or some shit, and why Martha is perplexed by him just as much as everyone else, right?
Yes. You find him as much a mystery as do I.
Yeah, some shit. And then at that point, Martha says, let's go to bed.
Yeah, but not me and you, Shakespeare.
Cause... But you and me, Doctor.
Yeah. Oh, but you also have the Master Revels come in at this point.
Exactly.
And go from, Shakespeare, I've known you for a while, to, I will rather die than see this play ever performed over my dead body, Shakespeare, you insert.
Now, I don't know, at this point I didn't understand, because, like, okay, you're the Master of Revels. You stand to gain from this play being performed in a success.
No, I think he's looking at it from your point of view, from the, like, there is no way, we do not have the resources to do this. I can't afford to build a new set.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, I'm going to go bankrupt. Like, this shitty play of yours is going to turn me insolvent.
All right, fair enough. I think that's fair.
You can't have him react more than, all right, I'm going to ban you for a couple of weeks, and then later on, we'll talk about it some more.
Yeah.
Instead of... It will never be performed and I'll drive you out of London and destroy your family.
Yes. And as an aside...
You have brought incredible income to date.
And as an aside, I killed Chris Marlowe. So actually, this was an inventive killing.
Yes.
As murders go in Doctor Who, this was a pretty inventive one.
Oh, well, this guy has an incredible mouth capacity. An enormous amount of water.
Well, it's because the writers were like, let's make a Master of Revels. What should he look like? Let's just do Henry VIII. I reckon we've got some Henry VIII shit in the back. Let's just make him Henry VIII. Yeah, absolutely. Carry on to me.
Yeah, his voodoo doll, because this one witch has this amazing talent of just going around London and snipping off people's hair and sticking it in her DNA replicator module voodoo doll. And yeah, she dunks it in the bucket and he starts spewing up enormous quantities of water.
Which is what you'd do, wouldn't you?
It's a really, really cool scene. It's a very effective scene, but I cannot help but think that it reminds me, I can't put my finger on it, but it reminds me of some horror film, some classic scene in some classic horror film, as in, I fear that this may have been literally plucked from the celluloid of
a greater world. That could be true. It's not like Nightmare on Elm Street or something, right?
Maybe. No, I don't know. Actually, that's not entirely impossible. It's something of that caliber of, this legendary film. But I definitely feel like I've seen that before. But then also, later on in Doctor Who, we have a very similar scene in Ghosts of Mars.
Yes.
Where people are dehydrated, basically, and they are walking around, like they're stumbling around, drowning.
Mm.
It looks very, very similar. Anyway, awesome scene.
That's good.
So it's both too late and too early.
Yeah.
Derivative and innovative.
Inspiring.
So it can't win.
Anyway, so at this, Martha, the Doc, and Will rush to the Master of Revels' aid, but he's been drowned. And the Doctor says, no, this is just an imbalance of the humours.
Exactly.
And this is when the Doctor says, it's witchcraft.
Exactly, he identifies it as magic, which makes me think of Babylon 5. Yeah, or the spin-off series anyway, where they have, I feel very, very similar to this, they have an alien race, cyber mages I think they're called. They use science, but they're so in love with the concept of magic, like just the stories surrounding magic, that they conceal their science in like voodoo dolls or little spells and whatever. This is what's happening here, right? Up until the very end, or very close to the end, everything is basically described as magic.
Yes, yes. But then, I don't know if it was at this juncture of the story or some point else, the Doctor's explanation of this version of magic is just inadequate. So it's like, you guys have all your numbers and your math and your science, so find the right combination of numbers and you can split the atom. It's the same thing, but with words.
But yeah.
That's not enough of an explanation, is it? Because those numbers are words.
Yeah. Well, that wedded to the fact that the words are completely uninspired throughout the episode.
Yeah.
Including the grand finale.
Yeah, they don't have the power to move us, let alone unleash a tide of blood on the world.
Have you guys read Dune? Or seen the film?
It's too long.
Yeah. Less so the miniseries. But there they have, like, a certain combination of words matched with a particular intonation can bring forth a physical, like a scientific reaction somewhere, elsewhere.
Yeah.
Which kind of explains spells, right? There's like a weird sci-fi explanation for spells. I like that as a concept. I think this has potential, but I don't think it goes very far.
Well, that's the other thing. I think that, again, if there's enough body to William Shakespeare's work, that the writers could have found lines
that match this.
Or at least somehow worked out. We've probably all read or watched or reworked Bill Shakespeare play to make an entirely separate play or an entirely different body of work. Mm. A cento, a bricolage poem or something like, you know. Why the fuck couldn't they sort this out?
Another one where they also drop really cool terms into... Anyway.
But you know what I mean? They could have done something other than, I reckon I could knock out a Shakespeare line. And none of the damn rhymes are in iambic pentameter.
Well, yeah. Oh my god, you're watching this.
No.
Nick starts counting. He's like, that's not iambic pentameter.
No. In Macbeth, the witch is talking tetrameter.
That's my note here as well, though. It's the Macbeth connection. Fuck it, let's jump to that. We Wikipedia this. Macbeth was written sometime between 1599, works really well, and 1611.
Yeah.
Thank you, Wikipedia. We have aliens that are masking themselves to look like three witches in a Shakespeare-centric Doctor Who story.
Yeah.
Who inspired whom? So we have three witches. Yes, they look kind of witch-like, even in their weird interdimensional form. But they don't actually look like Disney witches. They have appropriated that guise in 1599, right? That's just a hologram, let's say it. Sometime after this story takes place, William Shakespeare sits down and writes Macbeth. And writes something quite similar to these characters. Did they inspire him? Or, what I was thinking during the episode was, they say they were basically brought back into the world through the words of William Shakespeare, which kind of works if he had been writing Macbeth in such a way that, you know, pulls them in.
Yeah, there's a missed opportunity if he was writing it before and they just left it unsaid. There's a missed opportunity if he wrote it later and they didn't use more good lines from Macbeth in this episode instead of the Doctor just pulling random ones from plays or Dylan Thomas or wherever.
The Dylan Thomas bit. And this was after the guy died, right? No, was it? It was after Dolly dies.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're jumping ahead. But yeah, the jumping in with the Dylan Thomas, the rage against the dying of the light. That made no sense in what they were talking about. No contextual sense. She's like, well, she was always not, you know, she died. It's like, rage against... She didn't rage against the dying of anything, neither while she was alive or dying, by the sounds of things. Made no sense.
No.
It was just ham-fisted to have that little joke of William Shakespeare wanting to steal the quote but not being able to.
Yeah.
All right.
That lame little punchline.
Mm.
Whatever. Let's move on with the plot, I think. What's the next one? Oh, they're in bed.
They're in bed. The bed scene. So Martha has made a few allusions that... Well, this is basically just the Doctor being absent from the room. Mentally, whereas so she's saying, you know, well, there's only one bed. It's like, I'll be fine. Oh, well, it's not much room here. It's like, whatever, dude. It's like, what are you thinking about, my mate Rose? And it's just that.
Yeah.
What's even worse, isn't it? Because they're looking at each other. She really fancies him because this is a pretty good first date. Yeah. I mean, let's face it, this is pretty, pretty damn good. And he says, it's staring me right in the face and I can't see it. They are staring at each other. It's like the kiss moment. And he has to ruin the mood completely by mentioning his ex.
What was kind of annoying here is, so we've had Donna Noble as a sort of a buffer away at this point, which was not romantic. And now we've kind of gone back to some level of romantic writing in which unrequited love at the very least in this scene. Oh, yeah, and that's probably why people don't like Martha.
Well, also, isn't it hugely accelerated? Because this is the first 10 minutes of episode two. Where was Rose at this point? She wasn't 6 inches from the doctor, basically reaching out her tongue in case.
Rose did have a boyfriend.
Yeah.
She did have a boyfriend. Martha's single and ready to mingle.
Yeah. And older?
Yeah, definitely older. How old was Rose meant to be?
Oh, very young. Yeah.
19.
You're right.
That's very young.
But still, all Martha's had at this point is a kiss, a couple of compliments, interspersed with some fairly shabby treatment.
Yes.
So, 1,000-yard stares and just being ignored and, I don't know, it's far too quick. Well, I could have done with that. I could have done with this episode being 3 episodes further into the series, to be honest.
You think?
Yeah.
I feel like this kind of follows the Sandra Bullock-Keanu Reeves pattern of, you know, relationships that start off in incredible danger are going to be very intense and then probably not work out in the end. And we've just had one episode with Doc and Martha saving each other's lives, Doc saving everyone in the hospital, being the total hero, the massive alpha, and now he's taking her for an adventure that no other person could possibly take her on. And, yeah, he's good looking, and she's single. Why not? And they've just seen Shakespeare. Like, couldn't be more romantic. And a fat guy just drowned in front of them.
And they're sharing a toothbrush.
They are sharing a toothbrush. I like the idea of a preloaded toothbrush. I would totally buy one of those on, like, a flight or something.
Is this a thing in the episode?
Yeah, so I haven't got a toothbrush when they get to the room. And he goes, here, for you, it's Venusian spearmint.
Yeah.
I totally missed this.
Would you rather not have had it wrapped in a little plastic case, though, than in his dusty old pocket? He's been wearing that suit for 900 years or whatever, and goodness knows the fluff that's accumulated.
I guess so. But I'm just saying, for the inventors out there in podcast land, invent the preloaded travel toothbrush. That'd be super useful for planes.
Yeah. Let's cut that and just invent it ourselves. Yeah. Gap in the market.
Yeah, sod you, podcast land.
Okay, so let's say Martha's been jilted and Shakespeare is writing furiously.
He is.
To finish his play, and who should appear at the window but...
Sexy witch.
Sexy witch.
Witch.
Let's call her...
Switch.
I was trying to remember the witch from Bewitched.
Oh, wow.
Samantha. Oh, damn it. Did no one else watch Bewitched? I used to watch it a lot.
No, I never.
How about Sabrina? Everybody wants
Sabrina.
Sabrina.
Excellent.
Okay, let's just go from here. Let's call her Sabrina.
Great idea, Nick.
Okay, so Sabrina has blown some weird green shit into his head.
Yeah,
like a cloud of something.
All right, got a question for you guys.
Yep.
Why does she suddenly need to advance to B&E? Like, why does she need to physically be there, break into the room, and blow some weird green gas at him when previously she was able to manipulate him from afar?
Hmm.
I mean, she was able to manipulate him to speak in front of an audience from afar, which, by the way, why does she not manipulate him to say those lines in front of the audience? Problem solved.
Okay, I gotta tell you, I don't think you've got the right interpretation there of making him speak in front of the crowd. I think he speaks of his own volition
because
he's so bayed by the crowd and his own ego. The only thing that she gives him a little tweak and he still goes, ooh, and that's it.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm not sure that it's completely... Whereas they really need him to write some stuff down. So maybe needs to be a stronger connection, a stronger psychic link. I don't know, some shit. Some shit a Doctor Who writer would write.
And did.
And did. So there's a puppet on a string.
Matthew Corbett. That was my note.
Screenshot.
Mm. Yes, please.
Comparison shots.
And she gets Will to write some coordinates down, some sort of pattern of things that I...
Yeah, we don't find out.
We don't find out
what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's also definitely include a screenshot of the website of William Shakespeare as he's voodoo writing. Because the look on that guy's face... In fact, Drew is doing a very good impression of it right now. In fact, I may just replace the picture of William Shakespeare on the Vindex, because that is priceless.
I look that way because I worked for 12 and a half hours then came here to record, but...
No.
That's just how I look, man. But talking about Sabrina...
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
Because there's a lot of Sabrina in this episode.
A lot of Sabrina.
What do we think of Sabrina?
Flawless skin. Way too flawless for 1799.
1599.
1599, sorry. Yeah, way too... People not wandering around like, where are your, like, sores?
And your warts and all.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that applies to everyone in this entire episode.
I guess so.
I think. And you could argue that she's a witch or she's an alien or whatever, so she's masking herself. In fact, the perfect skin isn't really what she looks like normally.
Yeah.
But yes, definitely get your point. Everyone is way too clean. There's too great a level of hygiene going on. Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't quite what I was getting at.
But oh, what do you think of her as a character?
Well, I just mean as her as an actress, because I thought she did pretty well. When she ripped off Linley's head, there was some real malevolence in that, some real brutality in that motion.
Now, I could fully buy the concept of bitchy witch. She seemed nasty. That's it. I'm with you.
I think she did a good job as well. I mean, how good a job can you do, really, given the part that she's been dealt? She did well.
I think she was a much better witch than her two mothers. They were overacted.
They also had way poorer makeup.
Yeah.
And they were one note, just in general.
Yeah. Although there is that Bedlam scene. That's not too bad. With one of the mothers.
Yeah, Doomfinger.
Yeah. Is that
her? Doomfinger!
Okay, so Sabrina has bewitched Bill to do some writing, and then
Milfy turns up.
What's her name?
Dolly Bird.
Oh, that's
Dolly
it.
Bird. Dolly Bird turns up.
I think it's
up.
Actually Dolly Bailey.
All right. Dolly Bird turns up for a midnight hand job.
To deal or receive.
Tongue clear from the context. And finds Sabrina in her place.
Yeah. Gets a little bit jealous, I think, at which point Sabrina reveals her true visage and murder death kills her.
Now, see, this is some bullshit. So she dies from fright, from what is what we find out later.
Yeah, she has a little spell, doesn't she?
But they literally look at each other for 4 to 5 seconds and she says, "Oh, I will take your broom to make my flight. Yeah. And you will speak no more this night," or something. And then she goes, and then dies. It's like, I don't know how fright works, but that shit is usually pretty immediate.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it was. I think this was a spell very much along the lines of the I name thee spells that we get later on in the episode.
But the doc clearly...
So it's not until she has finished that rhyme that's the death...
No, no, but the doc literally
happens.
Later says, you know, she's died by fright.
Yeah, he's a shit doctor.
All right, cool.
Well, the witch lunges at her. And then the camera goes at an angle and...
Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch angle, and we cut to the loneliest bed in the world.
I don't know. I just that was weird. That was a weird, like, lag. Fright lag. So they find Dolly Bird in the morning. Actually, no, they don't. They hear the scream and they run in.
Yeah.
Doc Bolt and Ryan go in.
And then nothing happens for several hours, and it's morning and they're just beginning to chat.
Yes.
Had not considered that. Very true.
And this is the stage where they say the Dylan Thomas bit, and
Shaky says, "How could she have died? She had such enormous tracts of spirit." And his arms go out, and you know where they've been.
True enough. And it's at this stage that we figure out that he's written the play, it's gone, except the last bit. He doesn't remember writing the last bit.
I don't think he says this. I think this is later. What happens is we cut to the theatre and we get two people who are rehearsing. Two actors are rehearsing and they recite
Oh, there's a bit before that. Actually, whilst they're there and they're several hours later and they're talking, this is when the architect comes into play.
What
happens is Martha sees Sabrina make off on her broom into the London night. And so when she says, "I've seen a witch," and it's like, "Oh, well, our architect used to say that."
Well, they go to the Globe first. They don't go straight to Bedlam. They go to the Globe and Doc's looking around. And
yeah,
they have a scene there.
Exactly. We go to the Globe. He notices the 14 sides.
Yeah.
And they leave the Globe. And as they leave the Globe still has two actors on stage. So we have two things happening. They are going to Bedlam. Two actors on stage are rehearsing. And in whatever order that happens... Whatever. Let's deal with that.
Okay, let's deal with the cutscene real quick. Two actors doing the final bit of Love's Labour's 1, and they summon a weird...
Carrionite.
Yeah. Everyone cool with that?
Yeah, is this the true form of the witches? Is this what they really look like?
Yeah, I think so. Which is pretty witchy.
So we see them in three forms. Mm. We see them in their true Carrionite form, flying around, 3D animation, whatever.
Yeah.
We see them as Disney witches...
And then we see them as Maybelline models.
Yeah. So why do we have those two fake ones? Why couldn't they just pick one fake one?
I don't know. Why don't they just constantly wander around looking like Giselle? I don't understand it.
Yeah. Like, they would clearly blend in very easily if they all looked like just regular human beings.
I don't know. They'd have to fend off all sorts of unwanted advances.
I reckon they need to eat people to maintain the visage. We all good with that?
Yeah, but
we get to see the two mothers. No, we are not good with that, Nick.
We are bad with that.
We get to see the two mothers chow down on Romeo number one in the very opening scene, whilst Sabrina is chatting to the camera. Chatting to us, in fact.
They just ate round him and saved the heart for her.
Oh,
the heart.
Obviously, you have to pin this down to something that's off screen.
It's in the subtext. It's in the subtext.
Okay, well, let's jump across to Bedlam in that case.
Actually, no, because there's one real. There's a bit of a fuck up here, again, in the writing.
Oh.
With the two actors, and they say, or better not mention this to anyone, otherwise we'll be the ones in Bedlam.
Oh.
They weren't privy to the earlier conversation when they say that the architect's in Bedlam.
No, but is the emphasis on otherwise we'll be the ones in Bedlam?
Yeah.
Or is it like, otherwise we'll be in Bedlam?
No, otherwise we'll be the ones in Bedlam. I remember making a mental note. It's fucked up.
Bing bong, future Drew Beckwell again. I have another example of that from earlier in the episode, when Martha runs out into the street when Lily's choking and says, "Oh, it's that Lily bloke," when his name was never mentioned in the scene where they appeared together. More off-screen subtext. So lazy. Oh, wait, I wasn't going to pick holes this week. Back to the show.
That's very poor writing.
Drawing from last week's episode where people are on the moon losing their shit.
Did you see the screenshots that I added to the website? They are clearly overreacting, man.
They're not overreacting. They are reacting.
Yeah, appropriately insane with fear and panic. Whereas you've got these actors from 400 years ago
who've just shed a hallucination.
Well, there's this 20-foot demon witch spirit which is swooping down towards them.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of like, oh. And the music doesn't even change from sort of twee little medieval. There's no fear in that scene at all. But there's this fucking great alien in front of them. And,
and they were just like, got rehearsals, haven't we? Better carry on with rehearsals.
We have, in the classic Who episodes that we've reviewed so far, we've encountered something very similar, which is almost always at the end of a serial, where the TARDIS dematerialises and the locals, from whatever time they belong to, they witness the TARDIS dematerialising, and they say, and this happens on numerous occasions, they say, "Oh, let's never mention this to anyone, or they'll think that we're crazy." And they're always super calm. This very much reminds me of that, but yes. Yeah.
Also, you've got the TARDIS just in the street. People are going to be picking up the phone going, "Is this the devil's ear, please?" You know, but people just leave it unmolested the whole episode.
That's a super good point.
Yeah. Okay, Bedlam.
Bedlam!
Off to Bedlam.
Yeah.
Because that's where the architect, whatever the fucking that name that dude is.
Peter Street.
Peter Street.
Who was the real architect of the globe.
Oh, there you go. Did he go to Bedlam?
Exactly. Did he go mental?
I didn't look that far.
Do you know, I actually learned a thing. Doctor Who taught me a thing. I was aware of Bedlam, you know, throughout the ages. I didn't realise it stretched all the way back to, like, the 13th century. I thought Bedlam was more of a 16th, 17th, 18th century type of institution, but super old.
Wow.
One of our oldest institutions, apparently, which is nothing to be proud of.
Is that why it was an enormous building?
It's fucking huge,
yeah.
But I think it was. So yeah, there you go. Every day's school day.
Where was it?
London.
Yeah, but where?
Fuck no.
Old London. It wasn't very big back then, in the middle.
Oh, yeah, in the city somewhere. Zone one. Okay, so yeah, we find the guy and he's out of his wits. Oh, also we do have a burly, terrible warden, right?
Yes, who offers to give anyone they please a good whipping.
Yeah, this is sort of a side to, like, hey, mental health, it's not cool to be just sort of
blasé.
Yeah, or the ill treatment of people with bad mental health issues.
Do you feel like maybe this episode is, in parts, more PC than other episodes?
I think it's hinting at a problem that exists, but fucks it up by not being particularly PC and ever so full of shit.
Or is it possibly just a reference to her having worked in a hospital?
I think it's just caring, yeah. It isn't a massive progress. Again, it's one of those things that's showing that the anachronism of the time, you know, and their values.
Sure.
So they go in and they don't say that it's not it's not a conflict with their own set of values. And that's kind of cool, rather than just letting it slide. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
At this point, you also have Shakespeare going from, in 5 seconds, and you may want to sound like this, or you may not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to presume to tell you what to do. In 5 seconds, he goes from, "I lost my son, the futility of fleeting existence," to "be or not to be, ooh, that's good." Just like that.
Yeah.
"My boy is dead, I'm a fucking genius."
"My only boy, the Black Death took him. I wasn't even there. I didn't know, I'm sorry.
Let me question everything. The futility of this fleeting existence, to be or not to be. Oh, that's quite good.
He really cared about that kid.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, too pretentious, you know, at one point.
Just more Shakespeare being a superficial, vacuous dick.
Yeah.
All right, so let's feed on to the actual meeting with the architect.
Mind meld.
Mind meld.
Hang on.
Mind meld.
That's not the first note. Who is the architect?
Well,
it's fucking Super Hans. Super Hans is the architect.
Is that Super Hans?
Yes, it is.
From Peep Show.
I've only watched some random episodes.
Oh my god. Why have you not watched Peep Show?
I'm sorry.
Podcast land, if you've not watched Peep Show, go find some Peep Show. It's real good for what ails you. Anyway, it's okay. Super Hans, well done. Good spot. Mind meld.
Yeah, we were talking about this when we were watching it earlier. It's a total Vulcan mind meld. Well, sorry, it's not,
not a total.
Total.
It's a partial.
It's a partial mind meld in that it starts off very much like a Vulcan mind meld. It's, hands on face and everything, and then it turns into hypnosis.
It's a mind fingering.
Well, he fingers his face.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a mind fingering. It's, you know what I'm saying?
Like, he's tweaking more than penetrating. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I mean, sure.
It's not like a full...
He goes in there, he strokes his mind a little bit.
It's not a full Vulcan skull fuck. It's gentler.
Yeah, that's some...
I feel like you've had mind melts from clearly, like, totally wrong Vulcans.
it rhymes with Dr. Spock.
Yeah, second time that we've had this with Tennant so far. Girl in the fireplace.
Yes, although that was an actual mind meld. Fear her was the other one.
Mm. Did he fear? Oh, he didn't fear her. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But this was more of a cathartic thing. It's giving this guy access back to his own memories.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't really feel like anyone gives a shit about this architect at all.
No.
Main reason for that being that, spoiler alert, he dies at the end of the scene and then no one cares about him whatsoever. No one asks them, like, so, wait, hang on, you came to visit this dude and then he kicked the bucket? You're already locked in here, you're clearly gonna stay. Like, yeah, anyway.
Okay, so the witches turn up because they know that something's a-brewing.
Yeah. They sense a disturbance in the Force, essentially.
They're clearly somehow hooked up to him, like, they're linked,
They're linked in.
They are linked in.
Endorsable skills. Cauldron staring. Okay, so they see through the cauldron that something is afoot. So one of the mothers... We actually don't know which mother. Do we?
Yeah, you said.
Yeah, it's Doomfinger.
Is it Doomfinger? Okay, Doomfinger is dispatched to deal with the interlopers, I guess.
Yeah, so she transports her way over there. She beams into the cell.
Which, why do they walk everywhere at this point?
Exactly. Why does Sabrina have to B&E? Why does she have to break into the building where Shakespeare is writing when she can clearly just transport her way in there and just plop?
I love that you do enough breaking and entering to have a shorthand.
That's what it's called, man! That's clearly what it's called.
I'm not aware of that term.
What, B&E? That's like in lots of cop shows. Oh, fuck it. I'm not a criminal, guys. My point is, they can transport places. Why don't they do that?
No idea.
Yeah, it's dumb.
Instantaneously.
Absolutely goddamn dumb.
So anyway, Doomfinger, you know...
Sorry. You have to pause.
Doomfinger with her Doomfinger, Doomfingers... The architect. Right?
Not before he reveals that he met the witches on which street?
Yeah. All Hallows Street.
Yeah. What the hell? Really?
I feel like they were just like, witchy, 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 witch. a typewriter. Witchy, 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 witch. Why couldn't it just be like Bow Street or something? It's just like a normal fucking street.
Any street. Whatever. She kills the architect and then she is... counter-transported, counter-beamed back into their evil lair on All Hallows Street by the Doctor. How?
By using the old magic. That's what he says. He goes, oh, that's old magic.
Really?
In that exact tone.
I can vouch for that.
And what he says is, if I can name this race, then something will happen, right? And so he figures out at this very pivotal point that 14 sides, 14 words. Oh, 14 stars in the consortia of
the
stars.
The Rexall planetary configuration.
Thank you. Anyhow, and says, I name you Carrier Knight.
At which point she beams out of the room. She's forced out of the room.
No, I don't. Anyone could get to grips with how that worked. Just within the internal logic of Doctor Who.
Yes. No, why would the name make her disappear? But also, I feel like we've had the whole, I name thee, before.
Oh yeah, all the time. Everything he ever names would just randomly disappear or do something.
No, as in, I feel like we've had him beating some alien by, or possibly, maybe we've had that art since then on Doctor Who, maybe I'm misremembering the order, but I feel like there are many other occasions on Doctor Who where the Doctor names something, and that then basically just beats them. At least in that scene.
I don't know. My problem was with the logic of you name stuff all the time, almost every episode.
Yeah.
maybe the witches, they're operating with black magic, dark science, whatever you want to call it. Maybe it operates in some way on fear, and the witch being called Carrionite, she doesn't expect it. She has the power over everyone in the room because she's the witch. But now the Doctor is the force she doesn't understand.
She's the witch doctor.
Yeah, she's been witch doctored, and now she's the scared one, and she bugs off.
I could totally.
I buy that. I think that's a really good explanation.
Thanks.
Yeah, you are welcome.
Okay, so witchy's back with the other witches.
Yeah,
and so they know what they're dealing with now.
Well, they know that they're dealing with a non-human, presumably.
And is it at this point that we figure out that Will's play contains witchy fragments?
Well, no, I think we get that in the whole rehearsal scene before.
No, as in at this point,
Do they confirm?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, I see, right.
Yes, Shaky, he remembers his last few lines, but not writing them.
Right, yes.
Again, is fucked up. If I've ever written something, we're like, I didn't really write that. Cool, delete. Cross it out. He's like, I'm just going to get rid of that bit.
Because he
says, like, what happens at the end of the play? Well, they win back the girls and, you know, it's all fun and it's great, right? And then some other random stuff. Just take the other random stuff
out.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
you remember writing random stuff? Yeah, just don't give that to your actors.
Yeah. Also, one other line I wanted to pick a hole in, damn it, at this point, is... What did these Carrionites do? Way back when, they were messing around, they were causing havoc, so right back at the dawn of the universe, nobody knows if it was a myth or a legend, they were banished somewhere and they went into hiding, just like the Arachnos. How hectic was that dawn of creation? Essentially. Everything happened at once.
And no one took any fucking notes.
No!
There were no minutes to any of those meetings.
And the Satan pit. Fucking imprisoned Satan as well.
Yeah, everyone is incarcerated, and then while everyone's in prison, universe just reboots, basically.
Yeah, it was like, oh, the dawn of time, which no one really knows about, apart from me, for this specific scenario. No, you're right. They go to that well too often.
Well too often.
Well, we're coming up to the next bit of lazy writing, because we have a movie reference.
Oh, this gets me so angry. Yeah, I'm so angry watching this. So, Martha quite clearly says, okay, but I'm here, so the world doesn't end in 1599. That's solid logic.
Yeah.
He says, well, how do I explain this complicated time stuff to you?
The infinite temporal flux.
The infinite temporal flux. Have you seen Back to the Future? Yeah. Well, those writers were much better than our writers. So just go with that.
Yeah. No explanation necessary.
Moving on. You fucks, that was so bad. That's the worst piece of writing.
Yeah, agreed.
I think in all of who we've come across so far.
Yeah.
Okay. And I like that they were like, which house is it on All Hallows? It's like, is it the big decaying cauldron repository?
Wreathed in mist.
Yeah, yeah. Crows and like jars of frogs.
Oh, I actually don't even remember seeing the house.
It's so witchy.
Okay, I'm screenshotting it.
It's ridiculously witchy.
But yeah. I counter that with Will bursting into the theatre saying, stop, we can't go on with this play. And the lead actor going, everyone's a critic. I like that.
That was funny. Yeah, that was good.
But it does sort of pale.
Yeah. So they knock out Will in that scene, and Martha and the Doc go to try and confront Sabrina.
Bingo.
Yeah. So Martha, learning, she's learning things, and she's like, I'm going to use this power of the name. Doesn't work on Sabrina, because apparently that only works once. Let's just make this shit up as we go along.
Because the witch knows that they know her race.
Exactly.
Nothing left to fear now. She's had time to...
The Druidmeister's logic is sound.
All right, fine. So, Martha, why does it work on her?
Oh, what? Oh,
because she.
And why does it have to rhyme?
Yeah, it's only when a rhyme is completed that anything actually works, and that is throughout the entire episode, including when Shakespeare's saying shit.
But not when the Doc says it the first time round.
When does he rhyme?
When he says the power of the name, he doesn't rhyme that.
No, he just says Carrionite. Also, the coordinates at the end of the play, don't rhyme either.
No, they do rhyme.
They do?
They rhyme at the end, and they rhyme at the end despite the fact that William Shakespeare said everything except for the coordinates, and he doesn't know what to rhyme with. He doesn't
know.
No,
not the Doc's coordinates.
Not Tinker's Curse.
The witchy coordinates.
Yeah, 862019.4.
Yeah, but that 4 needs to rhyme with, like, more or adore, but whatever it is.
Yeah?
From the line before.
Oh!
And it does, and William Shakespeare, when he's ad-libbing his rhymes... He completes everything except for the number, doesn't know which number, looks at the Doc, goes, can you insert a number here? And he does, and coincidentally it rhymes.
Oh. Okay. That could have been worse.
Pissed me off a little bit, doesn't matter.
Yeah. So Sabrina has knocked Martha out, and the Doc she's sort of vaguely seducing him at this point, and then steals some of his hair for another voodoo doll.
Yeah, she tricks him into thinking she's seducing him.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I can see why you try that.
Yeah.
And just retreats into his ego, becomes utterly blind to what's going on.
And then his fairy starts saying, you touched my hair. Give that back. So Sabrina goes off.
A bit that I have pretty much just glazed over whilst watching this.
Don't worry. It was super important.
Also, I think...
I want to be part of the joke, man.
I think the Deep Darkness may be a club for Doctor Who villains. Yeah. Because the witches are there, the Daleks went there in the void or whatever. They are just having a banger.
Aren't they?
While they wait to...
The darkness are there.
Yeah.
They're playing the tunes. So Sabrina flies off to be with the other witches.
Yeah, this is where we get that reference to, this is not magic, this is actually science. Because you're referred to it as a DNA replicator or whatever.
Oh, right, yeah.
And she jabs him in the heart.
Yeah, and it stops one of his hearts. But his heart's okay because...
We get a scene that is very, very similar to the X-ray scene.
Which I hated.
Yeah.
Why won't he stop?
Well, it worked so well in the last one.
I liked this one better than the X-ray one. I didn't mind the X-ray one. I thought this was actually quite good.
So they've at this point figured out the plan.
He doesn't end up barefoot, so yeah, it's clearly superior.
They figured out the plan in its entirety, and this is my favourite soundbite, which is they want to bring back bones and blood and... But he says it exactly like that. I don't know what goes wrong with his elocution. Okay, so they're off to the globe to try and... Oh, I know! So Will fails in stopping the play, so they actually open this fucking portal, right? Portal opened.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Actually, in this bit, I really liked the ad-libbing of one of the other actors when Bill Shakespeare is toppled over and someone just needs to kind of fill the blanks. I really liked that.
Yeah,
I even liked his silly little dance that he does.
Yeah, it's very nice.
That's good. I really liked the CGI, the special effects.
Yeah.
I thought they were badass, apart from the actual creature? Witches themselves, but they're like the glow. Yeah, absolutely, that was cool.
The way that it fades into the ceiling towards the end. Yeah, it's very nicely done.
Well, even wider than that, the wide shots of London, they were really good.
Really nice.
They were worth repeating over and over again. And also, seeing the globe from the air with the vortex coming out of it and just houses everywhere, that was so much better than one square building on the moon last week.
That's true.
I mean, because as you zoom into the globe, they've actually rendered all the people outside it running around. So,
I gotta look more closely.
Yeah, that's unprecedented detail.
Yeah,
well done
for a Doctor Who shot.
Well, they probably had some motion graphics designers and CGI renderers at the BBC working in tandem on both of those episodes at once. And it's like, well, we've got 10 guys. I did about 9 people to this one scene, and then we only have one person to render a hospital on the moon. Or we could do it 50-50, and both look kind of okay. Nah, let's go with that first idea.
Yeah. Well, it definitely needed help. So, yeah.
You can't project manage this. In retrospect, to be good, I'm afraid.
Okay, so at the globe, everything's going tits up.
Yeah, and now, once again, the Doctor makes it very clear to us that there's only one person who is able to rescue us, to save the world. In fact, to save the world from a millennium of blood.
And cackling.
Someone who is wittier, cleverer, and simply more heroic than anyone, including the Doctor himself, is.
Alan.
That's Bill Shakespeare.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Alan Carr.
Alas.
Oh, hello! Bloody wishes everywhere!
That would have been brilliant. Okay, yeah, so Bill's going to save the day.
Yeah.
And how is he going to save the day?
The power of words.
His wordsmith mega powers.
And what were they like?
This just makes me sad.
Yeah.
You read it, damn it.
He just needs confidence. It is in pentameter.
Yeah.
But that is all I've got to say for it.
Even do you have the actual quote there?
I don't. I remember my doting doctor tells me I am not!
I remember that bit too.
Yep.
Yeah, and the actor was really throwing himself into it in that line, which made it worse.
Did make it worse. It was just... It was hammy, wasn't it? It was not good.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan. And then at the end of it, some word needs to be thrown in.
To rhyme with Tinker's cuss.
Oh, and Martha contributes with... Which is now... Wait, hang on. What was the first Harry Potter reference that we had?
That was the Doctor having read Book 7, which at that time, I presume, hadn't come out.
Okay. See, I forgot what it was, but I knew that this book was some joke.
That joke's going to date super quickly. Yeah. I've read Book 7. Cool, man. That was 10 years ago.
So she says, Expelliarmus, Doctor adds, good old JK. And now, I'm assuming that since Bill Shakespeare has been stealing lines for his plays left, right and centre, he's now stolen Expelliarmus, and somehow, through some weird twist of fate, he's going to end up writing Harry Potter.
Maybe. What really annoyed me about that is like, oh, good old JK, that's what the kids like, Harry Potter. Let's just get Harry Potter into this episode. The kids will like us and give us good ratings and we'll all keep our jobs. Harry Potter. And also Heelys. Maybe some yo-yos. Just shit that kids like. Really annoyed me.
Yeah, you say that though, but as I tweeted this morning, people really dig this episode, and Potter fans really love the limp crossover element of it.
Really? Well, limp being the operative word there.
Yeah.
Wait, hang on. What are you basing this adoration on?
I mean, not me. I mean, talking to the microphone,
what are people saying? What are people saying?
Well,
I think if you just mention a couple of keywords, like J.K. Rowling, Expelliarmus, Harry Potter.
Someone's just never going to stop joking.
You're good. Yeah,
fine. J.K. Rowling has saved the Earth from a millennium. So.
Bing bong, final future Drew Back When interpolation here. The Twitter selection of Shakespeare Code hashtag messages runs like, this may be one of my favourite episodes ever, when the Doctor references Harry Potter ... What if the Ministry of Magic was Torchwood ... Hashtag Potterhead, hashtag Whovian, hashtag mind blown, hashtag Shakespeare Code. One just says, the Doctor and Harry Potter, hashtag Shakespeare Code. That is justification enough. Just watch Doctor Who pay tribute to Harry Potter. Hashtag Oh I Cried. Hashtag Expelliarmus. Hashtag Good Old JK.
All right.
There's nothing that can redeem it for us three.
No. But okay. So everything gets sucked back through the vortex, including every page of Love's Labour's One.
Including every page of the 2,000 copies that he apparently wrote overnight.
Who's copying them? Surely there's just a finite amount of time it takes to copy.
There's a finite amount of paper in Britain.
Yeah. Anyhow, maybe he had 1,000 monkeys at 1,000 typewriters.
That's how they wrote this final speech. That was the best these monkeys could do.
So everyone's gone. The three existing Carrier Night witches are now in the orb.
Yeah, which, have we even seen this orb before in this episode? Or is this like just some random snuggle orb?
It's a crystal that forms part of the speech at the end.
Yes.
They say, this crystal activate.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And also the witch is
stuck in this.
Yeah, the witch is stroking it in the globe while they're watching the play.
Oh, right. And now we can even hear them stroking it from the inside, like scratching it from the inside. It's very Superman. It's like a Superman prison.
Mm.
But yeah, okay, fine. So that happens.
Everyone's good. The entire audience thinks it's special effects. Will, who has just, like, saved the entire world, his immediate thought is, I think you're pretty special. Right, that's like his next entire lie. Like,
he immediately goes back into the bone zone.
Huge lad.
Yeah.
Also, we didn't at all address the idea that William Shakespeare is bisexual.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that. Shall we have the revealing soundbite?
Come on, we can have a good flirt later.
Is that a promise, Doctor? Oh, 57 academics just punched the air.
There you go.
I don't know. I mean, not that that upsets me either way. It just seems...
What does that upset you, Nick?
No, it doesn't at all. I'm just saying it's...
Nick, come
just
on. A, be a little open-minded.
You shut up. I'm perfectly open-minded. I just think it's a weird writing choice. Like, there was just a weird non-joke in there.
But it alludes to a real-life controversy among academics.
Yeah.
Because they say that some of his sonnets were written to a young man, or I can't remember the exact term, but people argue over it, is the point. Yeah.
I'm cool with it. I just...
You don't seem cool with it, Nick. I'm kidding.
Okay, end of the episode.
Yeah, well, almost.
Yeah, it's a little
because we have a reference. And in fact, you didn't even want us to talk about this when we rewatched it. You had something very important to say.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I think I know exactly what you're going to say.
Yeah, the Virgin Queen turns up, right? Good Queen Bess.
Who Elizabeth recognises the Doctor.
Yes. And so this is why I think that she recognises the Doctor in this incarnation.
Go for it.
It's the 50th.
Mm.
In the 50th, her and Matt Smith are taking a tumble.
Yeah.
And then the Zygonde also is around. And then David Tennant turns up.
Bingo.
In that same bit. That's why she recognises David Tennant.
Yeah, they get married as well, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly what I was thinking as well. So did they write this in? They probably did write this in thinking, we'll fix this.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Someone write this on a post-it note. We'll revisit this.
And you know, there are other, and we'll get to this in future episodes, where it's lots of allusions, or at least one or two that I can think of, where he deflowered the Virgin Queen.
Really?
Yeah, at least one. That I can think of that comes to mind. Anyway, yes, so that was my thing. Nice circular. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. It's nice. There's some ambition. They're having timey-wimey fun rather than wondering, are we going to get recommissioned?
Yeah.
But you also have Shakespeare still coming on to Martha, but she repels him because of his breath, but that's not the point I'm making. He wrote a load of sonnets for the so-called Dark Lady as well.
Oh, really? Mm.
That is actually a thing.
Huh. Oh.
And so that might be the one reason they had to rush to get this episode out in Martha's Run.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
All right, fair enough.
I didn't know that.
That's quite redeeming, actually.
Hmm.
Yeah, okay. Sycorax, does that turn up in any play ever?
I don't want to mention the trivia I looked up, because I looked up on Wikipedia. That's cheating.
It's cheating.
I mean, just go to TARDIS Wikia, podcast land, and there is actually a ton of references in this episode to Shakespeare stuff that does get it some points. I think the Sycorax... Does it turn up in The Tempest or something?
Are you serious? That is an actual thing?
I would have thought it's too pointed for it not to be a thing. They wouldn't have brought it up like that, I don't think, if it doesn't somehow turn up in one of the plays.
I'm looking this up now.
So what you got in this episode is the writers, they did a lot of trivia digging and shoehorned a lot of references in that were sly and subtle, but then didn't back it up with...
Writing.
Yeah. The thing that you're actually watching the episode for.
Yeah.
But that's for the mini-review section.
That kind of makes you feel like there are times in other episodes of Doctor Who where the writers have been kind of clever or just, I guess, made a reference to something without taking cred for it. Like, I mean, they named this alien race Sycorax after Sycorax of The Tempest fame. Recently, Wikipedia. And never, like, I had no idea.
No?
You know, they could have made a thing out of it.
True that? Yeah. Sure. I think I broadly agree with you, Drew. Right, okay, so the runoff, the back end of the TARDIS, some arrows get shot at them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's half a Strongbow moment.
And they're off to New York.
Yep.
End of episode.
Reviews.
Drood, take it away, man.
Well, like I say, I was primed for it to be utterly awful by you guys before. But I found this episode threatened to be good a fair bit of the way along. If only Shakespeare had stepped up to the plate. The witches were wicked and devious. They got many of the best lines. They were the ones actually speaking in verse. There were funny quips throughout the first half, some of which we've alluded to. There's good CGI. Good sets. Good production all round, really. And there are the allusions to Shakespeare's works. Martha and the Doc weren't really allowed to have any chemistry. And, you know, it doesn't help when the Doctor's just treating her like a dick to warm to her, especially when she's... Already she feels like a spare part in some scenes. It's weird. So yeah, they're just two actors in the same location alternating lines, but she still injected some pep into some of them. But Shakespeare and the denouement was an enormous letdown. You know that I like to wrap my mouth around a solid piece of elevated diction.
And this is upset on right now. Carry on.
And, okay, I know geniuses aren't on all the time, but fucking hell, man, it's Shakespeare. Make an effort.
Yeah. good point.
Write a sonnet, a soliloquy, something with force, not three lines, something out of the Rexall Planetary Configuration phone book, and then steal a word from J.K. Rowling like that means anything. I'm sure the kids were thrilled. My sonic boner inverted. So it loses a whole point. I can only give it a 2.2.
Fair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to waste everyone's time by basically parroting Drew's review back to you all, because I'm pretty in agreement with all of it. I mean, mostly it is, you know, it's all the lazy writing. Probably spent too much time on trivia, I think. But actually, yeah, Martha gets a raw deal here as a character and as an actress. That whole not having to get chemistry... It's not that you had to be particularly romantic. They can still have chemistry, but there was almost like you can't even be likable or useful or all those sort of things. I think the whole character generally suffers from this being post-Rose and also young and pretty and that sort of trope. So, yeah, I don't know. It was frustrating. Like I said, yeah, I think it threatened to be good. Although, really, really hammy witch-like creatures. Not the witches themselves. That was actually, I agree, Sabrina.
The CGI witches.
Yeah. The CGI witches look awful. Looked bad at the time, I think. Didn't look good hence. Liked the London shots. That was nice. So overall, I think I'm going to go for 2 flat.
Which is actually the exact score I had in mind as well. Well, I've got a raw deal here because I need to follow your mini reviews. I agree with pretty much everything you said, Drew. And I agree with pretty much everything you said, Nick. But I want to add something else about the dynamic between Martha and the Doctor. And that is that now that we find ourselves post-Rose... Had it not been for Rose, we wouldn't have necessarily judged the lack of chemistry between them so harshly.
Mm.
In the beginning of Rose and Eccleston, as in their relationship forming, not their relationship, them meeting, getting to know each other, he quite often treated her like a bit of an idiot, and she wasn't really that important to, you know, the grand scheme of things, and there was never any thought on, is there going to be something more romantic between them? Are they going to be friends, or, you know, is it a... Whatever. Master and...
Ward.
Teacher and...
Ward, yeah,
whatever. Now we feel the lack of romantic tension between them, I think, way more. And that... Sorry, I'm making a complete mess of this mini-review, but I feel like due to the lack of romantic tension between them here, it almost sets it up as a complete possibility that there can be romantic tension between them later on.
And this was my point earlier in the podcast, I think, that I don't understand why we needed that from Arthur. You know, again, with Donna Noble being a buffer. Need another romantic companion at all. It could have been something else, right?
Oh, I think the reasons are purely commercial. I think audiences responded incredibly positively to the Dr. Rose romance, and now we need something else. We need something to fill that void. He's clearly a romantic person. She is young and pretty. That works on TV. Those two need to be a couple.
Now, actually...
So a lot of people in the audience, I think, are really rooting for that
this
now.
This came up earlier today with a co-worker, a bit of a microcosm of exactly what you're saying, commercially and otherwise, that she was saying... I said, you know, we're doing this podcast review. Which episode? Said the Shakespeare Code. So, oh, God, I hate that one. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, and Martha. Oh, I hate Martha. I'm like, you hate Martha? Why do you hate Martha? It's like, well, it's more of a Rose fan. It's like, it's not either or. This is not Twilight. It's not Team Rose or Team Martha. They're just separate, right?
But that's the thing. Rose had so much time to build an impression in the audience, and Martha's just really close to it. So obviously she's going to be compared to that. It's weird that no one, like, probably more people go, I was more of a Rose fan than I'm more of an Amy Pond fan.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
But see, again, the point that my co-worker made was that, oh, I was of the right age that I really dialed into the Rose-Doctor relationship, and she was sort of probably a teenager at the time, okay. And, you know, that whole thing. So I think that when you were talking about the commercial, you know, how audiences responded and they needed to replicate some form of that, it's exactly right. I think that's spot on.
Yeah, money talks. It's money behind it.
Yeah.
Aside from that, totally, I could only really echo what you said. With one exception, sorry. I really like the CGI witches. Yeah, I think they look good. However, I absolutely fucking hated the crap Disney witches.
Hmm?
Yada, 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 lazy writing, blah, 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 blah. Really silly, stupid. 2.0. The second you said 2.2, Drewmeister, I went... Way too high. I'm going to take that down a little bit. Yeah, okay. That's it.
Okay.
Holy crap, episode over.
You are welcome.
Our next episodes are, in terms of Classic Who...
The Abominable Snowman.
The next new Who is...
Gridlock!
Which features the return of a Classic Who foe. whom we actually very recently encountered on Who Back When, the Macra.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Father Dougal Maguire, but okay.
No, actually, there's a couple of returns. The return of...
Cat People.
And the Face of Boo.
Yeah.
Audio.
Ugh, still the scapegoat. I think I might be recording that with JD next week. Really looking forward to it. Re-listened to it last week. Guess what? I hate it. No, I don't hate it. What are you going to do until the next episode of Who Back When drops? Here's an idea. Follow us on Twitter. Start with the Drood. You are...
Drew Back When.
Here's a soundbite of Drood singing how you spell that in some fashion or other. Yeah. I don't know which one I'm going to pick.
I am found at Drew Back When because it sounds like Who Back When.
And Nick, you are...
Nickelele.
That's like...
Nickel.
But with...
Ukulele. It's really not. How many followers have I lost?
Very much like... Nick. Like ukulele, but with Nick. That's the phrase.
How do we get a ukulele and write him a song?
Let's do this.
We're doing it.
And you can follow me, I'm Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
The original and best.
Until next time, be rad and excellent to each other. Rock on and cha-chow.
Bye.
Kablamo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When.